I think it looks okay.
The lorry driver outside disagrees. You walked in this morning and I almost forgot that it had happened.
I walked
then
past,
I saw you.
I see my reflection and get scared every time I see it.
So Jamie lost our battle. The forfeit for the loser was to fully shave their beard. And Jamie's now clean shaven. And I mean, it's really funny, isn't it?
I reckon he's only got a week like that, though, because he's already got a little bit of stubbly chin. It's already
annoying.
Growing back.
Well, the thing is, you did such a terrible job.
We were live streaming. I was trying to be delicate, but also get through it because, you know, it's boring to watch someone being clean shaved for 10 minutes.
Just don't do it then.
No, that was not the agreement. I earned the win and I earned the fact that I can see your chin.
I've now got a newfound respect for Ben. Because
I do it every day.
He shaves every day. And I know how much better I look with a beard. And to know that he wakes up every day
and makes that decision.
And makes a decision to say, no, I'm going to leave something on the table.
Who needs a jawline?
I think it's just quite nice to reflect, because this is, for context, this is just 2 days after our crazy, crazy battle royale, where the entire studio has been transformed back into a pub, we should address.
Yes, yes.
But also, what a day that was.
It was mad. I think we expected it to be chaotic. It was chaotic.
We always say with live, we don't know what's going to happen.
That was
it. We did not know that was going to happen.
Well, no, you bring a live audience into the studio, completely changed the vibe.
And they were amazed. Like, they got into it. I mean, they drank us out. Like, they drank all of the drinks.
We had an entire beer fridge, and except for the alcohol-free beer, which is still in there, it all got drunk.
So we had a live audience. We had a couple of guests in who were in the battle with you and Barry
tag team.
As well.
And you lost.
Yeah, well, no, they took the win. Yeah, don't spoil it. Some people haven't watched it. It's still available on
demand. Well, Jamie hasn't got a beard, and I just told them that you
So now the only reason to watch it is to see who won between Kush and James.
Yeah.
My favourite comment was, why does it look like Kush has dressed up for World Book Day? That's such a tight reference.
Him and James were dressed as gladiators, and I think Kush got the rest of the budget that was spent on James's.
I think it's just the fact that James has been working his costume for years in the form of toning the arms.
Sculpting his body, yeah.
But we've already had some wonderful, beautiful messages and DMs and emails from the people who are in the studio to thank us for
really
it, because
lovely.
I guess they also get a glimpse of all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes when you guys are watching VTs or before and after, and they get a glimpse downstairs of the gallery and the team. And yeah,
I think that was the biggest thing for me, was seeing people in the room appreciate how much work goes into it. Not from us, but from
clowning around.
From
the rest
know what they're
from
doing.
The rest of our team as well, and like calling out the people who were running the live show. That's the big thing, because we celebrate our team as much as we can, but seeing other people see that firsthand was amazing.
It was bonkers. It was I couldn't breathe through laughter at multiple points. And when you're having to like anchor the show or say things and it's just all going mad, and you can't hear yourself think because everyone is so loud in the room, it was really...
We were doing like the callovers to each other.
I couldn't hear you.
Mike, over to you. What's going on in the comments? You couldn't hear what I was saying.
No, Izzy just pointed at me and saying, you're live. And I was like, I've got to say something. I don't know what the question was. Anyway, yeah, absolutely amazing, amazing. Which actually brings us on to another amazing, amazing... I'm going to do three amazings.
Oh my God.
Amazing, amazing, amazing guest who we've actually just spoken to. You guys just interviewed Becca. I mean, wow.
Rebecca Roberts, the world's strongest woman.
Yeah. And encapsulating everything about that, not just physically, mentally, her entire journey. I can't get over just how inspirational it genuinely was. I'm literally gobsmacked. It was fantastic.
I feel like everybody has their own challenges and struggles in life. We all have them. But I feel like Becca has had a few curveballs thrown her way over the years. And then to have this most phenomenal, inspirational story is, yeah, I mean, we, I mean, Jay and I were on the sofa almost speechless because every word she said just landed.
For me, it was when we were first talking about doing a podcast like this and we wanted to have longer form, deeper conversations with people. That, to me, epitomised what we set out to do in the first place. We would never have been able to have that kind of conversation in a normal YouTube video.
Mm. And only four episodes in, it's another completely different take on food. And that's the beauty. It's unique people in phenomenal walks of life doing crazy different things. And then their relationship with and alongside food along that journey. I feel like, she was mind-blowing.
So this is mine and Ben's chat with Rebecca Roberts, the world's strongest woman. Now, before we play it, it's worth saying that it's quite an intense and heavy conversation at times. We touch on a number of different traumatic subjects throughout Becca's life. Death, loss, sexual assault, and lots of other traumatic moments. Completely understand that for some people, this might not be right for you to listen or watch at the moment. If that's the case, make sure you've checked out the other podcasts that we've launched so far that might be a bit lighter. But for now, this is our chat with Rebecca. Rebecca, hi. Welcome to the Bell's End Pub.
I love the name.
Thank you so much for coming down and for being on the podcast today. We want to start in the same way that we start every podcast. What is your foodgasm, your dream food scenario? What dish are you eating? Where is it that you're eating it? Who are you eating it with?
So it would probably have to be a Domino's pizza, right? It's got to be a large Domino's pizza with the stuffed crust, all of the meat in a barbecue base, followed by four Domino's cookies. And it's got to be in a hotel room the day before a competition. Now, Domino's is like my absolute tradition to have before competition. And that is like my foodgasm food that really kind of gets me. It's just my favourite thing. No matter where in the world I am, whether it's in America, it's got to be an American Domino's. It just has to be a Domino's.
I suppose you've picked quite well there because Domino's is absolutely everywhere. It's so global. Regardless of where you end up.
And it's always going to be the classic club sandwich that you can otherwise get in a hotel room, which is always a bit hit and miss.
Yeah, I love a club sandwich, but you are then you're leaving it up to the gods on what that club sandwich is going to be when it turns up. Whereas I feel
how
like
it's defined.
Yeah, exactly, and especially when it comes without the middle piece of bread. That
is it even a club sandwich?
Well, no, that's just a sandwich. That by definition, that is just a sandwich at that point. Not, and I wanted a club. I wanted a club. But with Domino's, you don't have that.
And when was the last time you had that situation? So that Domino's pizza with the cookies ahead of a competition. When was the last big competition?
The middle of last month, I did the Arnold UK competition. So Arnold Schwarzenegger, he kind of runs big competitions all around the world. He runs some in America, some in like Australia, and then last month's was the UK one. So it was in a hotel in Birmingham with my friends, and we ordered, I think we spent £150 on Domino's pizza.
Wow.
And yeah.
And is that just that, because this is you loading up on carbs, calories ahead of competition for the big event, or is that just a guilty pleasure and why not? This is a ritual that you just love.
The day before a competition, you do need to have a lot of carbs. So either pizza, pasta, anything with a lot of rice. It's just basically loading up on the carbs that you enjoy the most. I do have a pretty strict diet. So the day before a competition is just eat whatever I like, basically.
Cheat day.
Yeah, cheat day to the extreme.
So these strong women events, what is a strong woman? I know that sounds like such an obvious question, but is
not as an adjective, but as a thing, as a noun.
As a noun, as a thing. What does that mean?
We call it the Wild West of strength sports. So one competition, you could be pulling a truck, you could be lifting a car. I've carried a car on my back for 20 metres in one competition. I've pulled planes. I don't know if you watch World's Strongest Man at Christmas, but lifting the big heavy Atlas stones. And it's just like a lot of kind of static strength, moving strength, different kind of, it's just pushing the boundaries of human strength in general. It's just something that I love to do. And the sport at the moment as well is progressing at such an alarming rate. When I first started about 8 years ago, if you had a 200 kilo deadlift, you were classed as world class. 8 years later, you're not really world class unless you're pulling 300 kilos. So it's just incredible how much it's progressing. And yeah, it's
300 kilos.
I'm trying to put that into perspective because it's a number that I just can't really get my head around.
Ebbers, that's a little bit more than three of me.
That's a lot.
Right, thanks, mate.
I mean, that's a lot for anyone to lift.
How do you train for something like that? Because surely there must be a difference between pulling an aeroplane and lifting the weights in the gym, which are very much circular, or, you know, they're an even weight, as opposed to doing something like that, which must be out there.
Yeah, I train at quite a specialist gym. It's pretty easy to simulate events. So if I were to go into like a truck pull event at a competition, I'd just get a harness and I'd pull some of my mate's cars up a hill. So
it's a great prank to play on them.
Just leave the handbrake off and away you go.
Yeah.
And do you have like fair warning of what, it's not like you turn up and they're like, see that plane? Put it. Like, you know in advance of the event what the...
Yeah. They usually kind of give you about 12 weeks notice.
Okay.
For the big competitions, so it's not too bad.
And you are juggling an awful lot, because this is not your full-time job. Like, you've taken a day off today and to come down here and gratefully spend your time with us. But I feel it's almost the Clark Kent journalist ripping open shirt to be the Superman, and you're doing exactly the same. Because what is your day job and how do you fit all of your training around that?
So I work as a quality assurance analyst. So I work from home and I basically just stare at spreadsheets and coding all day. It works really well around my routine because it's a Monday to Friday job and I can choose my own hours within reason. So I usually choose the kind of work from 7:30 till 3:30. I'll get up at about 6:30 every morning. I'll do some fasted cardio, so I'll just kind of go out walking for a little bit. I'll start work, finish work at 3:30. I'm in the gym by 4:00. Sometimes my sessions can take like 4 hours, so I can be home by about 8:30, and then I'm meal prepping, I'm having a couple of hours of chill, and then I'm in bed. So it's a pretty hectic lifestyle. I do make sure I get my weekends free. It's all well and good having all of this going on, but you just need to be able to prioritize like your chill time and your time away from it as well, because it can be quite a demanding and stressful lifestyle.
I was going to say, it must be all encompassing at times, particularly if you're training towards certain events and things like that.
Last year especially, I did 11 competitions in the space of 12 months, and they were pretty major ones, so I was going in from one competition prep to another one straight away, and I wasn't really giving myself enough time to relax in between competitions, and it was a bit too much. So this year I've just decided that I'm just going to chill out a little bit, do a few less competitions and just do the more major ones.
So it must be hard physically is one thing, but mentally as well. I'm trying to manage that from sort of your brain's perspective and that relaxation and needing that side of things. That must be a really difficult thing to try and get your head around. You want to achieve so much and you want to do so many things and you're doing so well and you're winning so much at the moment as well. Like, how do you try and manage that, give your body the rest as well as giving your sort of mind the rest?
So I kind of compartmentalize. Strong woman Rebecca and normal Rebecca are two completely different people. When it's competition day or when it's training, like, my normal life Rebecca is out the window, and then as soon as I kind of leave the gym, that's when normal Rebecca comes back out again.
Mm-hmm.
So that really helps me separate the two. Like, it's almost the same as, like, do you know, like, your work mind and then your non-work mind, and kind of leaving your work in work. I leave strong woman in strong woman, and then as soon as I'm like not training or anything like that, I'm just like normal Rebecca, which is a bit kind of Jekyll and Hyde or Clark Kent, as you say. So one day I could be crowned like the world's strongest woman. 2 days later, I'm back in the UK and I'm back working and nobody really knows. It is like really kind of like Jekyll and Hyde.
That's such a weird thing to try and balance, isn't it, as well? Just like, what do you, like, friends and family make of it all?
Oh, they're all so proud, and they're great support as well. I've been through a lot in the last 10 years, but especially in the last kind of year and a half, and they've just been the best support network, and no matter what I do, they're always proud of me, and it's really good to have.
That's brilliant.
So how did you get into the strong woman world?
It was in 2016, but earlier than that, I had a rugby injury. So I used to play rugby while I was in university, and I gained a lot of weight because I couldn't do any exercise. My back was completely wrecked, and I couldn't really move, and rugby was like a goner kind of thing. And I met my partner, Paul, at the time in 2016 in May, and he agreed firstly to kind of be my personal trainer. And then it quickly, well, very quickly blossomed into like a loving relationship. I moved in with him within 6 weeks, and he was very much a strongman geek. He told me that he'd make me the world's strongest woman within 5 years. And I was like, are you being serious? And to be fair, he was right. The fifth year I won that world's strongest woman title.
Wow.
He had a lot of belief in me, and he introduced me into the sport. And it was crazy to start off with. I'm like, you want me to do this? And he's like, yeah, you can do it. So we met in the May of that 2016. And by September 2016, I was the UK's strongest woman.
Wow.
So it was pretty quick, like the rise to
that's the incredible
top.
Drive and motivation from almost one phrase, and then working together through that training to get from that kind of ground level to that. And then it went on to world's strongest woman. I mean, how do you ever compete on a world stage like that?
I've always had an innate kind of determination to succeed at whatever I do. Even when I was a child, I was fundraising for a trip up Snowdon, and they were like, you can't go up Snowdon. Like, I was overweight. I'd never really done anything like that before. And I was like, you know what? Watch me. And I did it. And I've always had that kind of like, if I have something set in my mind, that's getting done kind of thing. And as soon as I'd won that UK Strongest Woman title, I was like, you know what? I'm going to be the world's strongest woman. I don't care how long it takes, but I'm going to be the world's strongest woman. And I had Paul as an amazing support system. And he was very, very knowledgeable, and he was great at coaching me. He was basically like my full-time coach.
That's an incredible journey in, like you said, such a short amount of time. But even to go from May 2016 of, I think you could be Britain's strongest woman, to September, done that. Like that.
Tick, move on.
Had you had any inkling before that that you would even be able to compete in that kind of sphere?
Not really. To be fair, I had basically zero confidence back then. I would be wearing black and baggy stuff anytime that I kind of could. And Strongwoman, it gave me a whole new confidence that I never even realised existed. So now one of my big trademarks is to wear colourful leggings every single competition. And that's like almost like a symbolisation of me and my confidence coming out, because it's like rebelling against the past Rebecca that would always wear black. Now I'm here, I'm bright, I'm beautiful, I'm getting it done. Like, and that's like the new confidence that I've got on myself. And Strongwoman, it's given me so more than strength. It's given me like the mental strength as well to kind of to push through and hopefully inspire other people to be who they want to be and be proud of themselves, no matter what they look like, no matter what they do in life.
I've seen you speak before about taking up space and finding your place in the world and being proud of that. And particularly from a woman's perspective, where people don't necessarily feel like they belong or deserve to take up space. And that feels like such an incredibly powerful message for so many different people to hear. But it seems like it's been a big part of your journey as well.
Yeah, definitely, because I know what it feels like to be in that situation. I was in that situation for a big time in my life, even from school. I was always bullied for being bigger, for being different, and I never felt like I fit in. I never felt like I deserved to fit in. And in Strongwoman, like, I found my calling, and to be able to kind of pass that message on to other people. The amount of people that message me to say that I've inspired them to take up that space and know their worth, it means more to me than the trophies. And there was a meet and greet, and this one will stick with me for the rest of my life. She came up to me, and she had hand engraved a ring with "Know Your Worth" on it. And she said because of me, she'd had the courage to leave a relationship that was extremely domestically violent. And she now is happy. She knows her worth. She's out there and she's living her life. And she said, without me portraying that message across, she would never have been in that situation. And that ring now, it's on my trophy cabinet. And it's just like a reminder of the importance of the message that I'm putting across on a daily basis.
It is incredible when you look at the sheer strength that you go through in the competition, but it is the strength and the power of words and setting an example that actually can really truly sort of move mountains. I think the one thing that I've always find fascinating, we have a lot of people reach out to us as well, and challenges they go through with food in particular, and how, you know, finding joy and pleasure in food and having food play those two very different roles. So one being a time of celebration and with friends and family and really sort of the joyous times, and one being very functional and being very busy and trying to fit good food into a very busy life and not having time for that. You mentioned meal planning, and that is an incredible discipline to make sure that you're getting the prep around that. Matt, perhaps you could just share a bit more about what you do on a day-to-day basis to kind of maintain strong woman, but also in lead up to competition and whether it changes at all.
So at the minute, I'm currently in a slight deficit with my nutrition because I've had two pretty heavy competitions, and for that, my weight needed to be quite high. So it all depends kind of like on the level of competition that I'm doing. So my next one's going to be a British competition. So it's not as heavy as something like the world kind of level competition. So I will be dropping a little bit of weight for it. So my daily diet at the minute is actually quite simple. Morning meals, I'll have like an omelette. So I'll just like shove a load of veg in, put some eggs in. It takes 5 minutes and that omelette's easy enough. And then a lot of the time my nutritionist knows how lazy I am. So I do tend to have like microwave rice and, you know, like the frozen packets of veg and that I can just quickly put in the microwave. And I'll bulk cook a lot of chicken and just kind of keep it in the fridge just to be able to pull up. Out and heat up kind of thing. I am very lazy with preparing my meals and I don't like spending a lot of time in the kitchen. So just being able to kind of like cut corners like that, I know it's slightly more expensive, but it saves my sanity.
I think it's a reality as well. It's a reality that so many people live through is the, you know, we all want to cook quickly, conveniently, and it's knowing which corners you can cut to end up with something that's still nutritious, still sound and still delicious.
Yeah, definitely. So I do tend to just keep a lot of like the microwave ready stuff in my cupboards, and I meal prep as much as I can. So like I'll cook like 3 kilos worth of chicken at a time and then that'll do me a few days. So it's just all about saving that one bit of time. If I cook chicken 3 kilos worth in one go, that's saving me from cooking it like 10, 15 times. So.
And where did you learn about this, like the nutrition and food as fuel side of things? Because I mean, particularly with what we do, we've always seen food as, you know, yes, you have to eat 3 times a day on average probably, but you want to make it fun, so you want to try and experiment with different things and try new flavors and ingredients and dishes. But if you're looking at it from a fuel perspective, it kind of, I'm guessing, it puts you on a bit more of a guardrails of what you can and can't do. Like where did you learn that info from?
Originally it was from Paul, who was my partner, and he had a college degree in nutrition and stuff as well. And to be honest, the amount of research that he did was second to nobody. He would always be on YouTube, he'd always be researching the top strongmen, the top powerlifters, the top kind of in loads of different ranges of strength sports and what they would eat. And it worked really well. And my nutritionist now, she's a specialist in women's health as well. So my diet at the moment is currently just focused on a lot to do with that, because I do suffer with polycystic ovaries, which is another thing that I have to battle with competing as a female. Yeah, I could just kind of lean on the advice of other people and try and like not stress about it myself too much. That's why like I've employed a nutritionist, I've employed a coach, I've employed a physiotherapist, so they can take on all of that stress and I just follow exactly what they tell me to do.
That feels a big weight off your mind.
Yeah,
I'm guessing is that kind of like that stress of not knowing exactly what to do and how to do it and all of that. Follow the guidelines that are there. That sounds like a nice way.
Yeah, I just get sent a list of what I need to eat and I eat it. It's as simple as that. And the coach as well, as soon as he sends me through a program, I'm like, right, okay, that's exactly what I'm doing. So it's just kind of like just reducing as much stress as possible. I've got a best friend now called Laura, and I pay for her to come to my competitions with me. She acts as like my personal assistant throughout the entire competition. So she'll bring me my water, she'll bring me my food, she'll get my equipment as and when I need it. She'll take care of all of where I need to be and what meetings I need to go to, what interviews I need to do. She'll sort all of that out. So I just literally need to sit there and be the athlete. But then it's things like this that kind of make it. It's not just a single person sport, even though it looks like it's just me out on the arena floor. There's a group of people that make it possible for me. And it's just incredible to be able to have those in my corner.
And it is also super important through the likes of sort of misinformation on the internet, especially when it comes to nutrition and physio and knowing how to look after your body. There is so much information out there and it can't all be trusted. You have to know which sources they're coming from. So to surround yourself with qualified people to just give you that peace of mind gives you that amazing focus, which is remarkable.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I've got a lot of trust in my team. I trust them with my life. And to be in that position, it makes me really thankful and really grateful to have them all.
You mentioned about the PCOS and how that diagnosis has affected certain things in terms of your training, but also your diet and things like, can you elaborate on that a little bit and how it affects sort of you wanting to be the athlete that you are?
So it is quite hard to be able to kind of balance everything around, like, the PCOS. It stands for polycystic ovarian syndrome. So my hormones can be all over the place, and my periods can be all over the place as well. So even training once a month, 1 week during the month while I'm training, can be a complete write-off, which is what some men, obviously all men, don't experience. But being a woman and kind of training at this level with polycystic ovaries and having, like, that 1 month, 1 week out of the month is kind of like a complete write-off in a way. It's really hard to kind of like try and balance around. My diet has majorly helped. I've got a new nutritionist now who specialises in women's health and polycystic ovaries. So she has started me on some like natural supplements, which do really help, and that have kind of increased my ability to be able to have periods. So I do have like a regular cycle every month. And I tend to kind of have slightly more fats now and slightly less carbs to kind of combat my training. So after every training session, I'll have a big meal with 300 grams of smoked salmon, whereas before I'd have like chicken, but smoked salmon's got that healthy fats. And every morning I'll have 5 egg omelette for breakfast. So I really try and focus now on having a lot more of the healthy fats in my day-to-day diet than carbohydrates. And that really helps balance my hormone levels as well.
And is that the kind of information that's generally available for people who have or think they might have PCOS, or is that something you have to really kind of search to find?
You really do need to research it a lot. There's not really that much help out there for people that suffer with polycystic ovaries. And it's very, very common in the UK for women to suffer from it. So it's almost like a silent burden that I've kind of had to suffer from for years. But now I am a lot more open about having it. And I have been approached by women that do suffer from it as well. And they're like, oh, can you give me some advice? And there's just the advice really isn't out there as much as what we'd want it to be.
And it's really difficult to have blanket advice because nutrition is so personal as well, in the sense that not everybody is training to the extent that you are, and then, you know, a 5 egg omelette and large volumes of fish might not be the answer for everyone, but it suits you and what you're doing so well because of what the advice you've had from a nutritionist.
So before there was Strong Woman Becca, there was Becca. What was food like for you growing up? Was there different foods that you enjoyed that maybe you don't enjoy so much anymore, or vice versa?
Growing up, my mum was a very religious person. So we used to go to church on a Sunday and she would batch cook loads of big meals. And my favourite meal growing up was her batch cook of spaghetti bolognese. I still cook this recipe to this day, especially on like the anniversary of like her death and on her birthday and things like that. That was probably like the most reminiscent childhood meal that I can really like remember is her spaghetti bolognese. But I still cook to this day a lot of the time.
So it's nice to have some of those constants that are always there. But have there been any shifts in terms of, I guess, a relationship with food and how that has changed now that you've sort of moved into this more professional athlete role?
Yeah, so when I first started the sport, I was probably about 9 stone heavier than I am now. I went through a lot while I was in university. I don't even know if I can say this, but I was raped at knife point in 2014, and that caused me to gain a lot of weight. And that was probably one of the reasons that I hated like the way I was and didn't want to take up any space in this world. And I just kind of, that's why I'd wear black and things all the time. So I would binge eat a lot. Every single night I'd be having takeaways. I'd be eating family sized packs of crisps and chocolate and things like that with kind of no care in the world. So to kind of change from being that binge eater that hated herself, didn't want to be here, to being the world's strongest woman, it was a big change really, like in having what I was eating on a daily basis. And changing that perspective was a lot to do with what we spoke about earlier and my determination to kind of succeed to what I put my mind to. After I'd been through that, I had nothing that I wanted to achieve in life. And starting the sport, it gave me a goal and it gave me that back. And when I've got a goal, I will do anything in my power to achieve it. And whether that was changing my diet and going to the gym or anything like that, if it needed to be done, it was getting done kind of thing.
It feels very much like a taking back control after control had been taken from you in so many different ways throughout your life. Actually taking it back and having a focus and being more than those experiences and turning something in. And you, I mean, what an incredible journey that's been, particularly over the last few years, to, as you say, becoming the world's strongest woman. That's just a remarkable achievement.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I'm happy to kind of be an advocate of kind of surviving things like that and not letting bad experiences taint the rest of your life. You can still find happiness even on your darkest days, and that's something that I'm a big advocate for as well.
So when you get to these competitions, and they are huge events in big kind of spaces, venues, stadiums, you've got, it's, you know, the music is blaring, you say you almost go into an alter ego version of Rebecca. What is it that makes those events so special in terms of the community of people competing? Because you're up against other phenomenal athletes. Are they your arch enemies, or actually is it a really tight-knit community of people and you all get on really well?
The strong woman community is probably the best community in the world, like sporting community. I've heard of a lot of other kind of sports and all the other athletes not really getting on as much, but the strong woman community is like a big family. It's lovely. There's one competitor, her name is Lucy Underdown, who last year especially, we were very much kind of like first and second throughout everything. And she's really one of my closest friends in the sport. And at the top of podiums and stuff, we're always hugging each other, apologising to each other for winning. It's at that point, because I love her loads and I really want to see her do well, but then also I want to do well. So it's one of those things, like if she beat me, then I'm happy for her. And if I beat her, I'm really sad that I beat her, but then I'm happy that I beat her. So it's really crazy, but it's just nice to be able to have that kind of community. Like, it's one big sisterhood and we all know what we're fighting for and the stereotypes that we're breaking down, and we all know what we have to go through to kind of to push our bodies to compete at that level, and we have nothing but respect for each other, and it's just a great community to be a part of.
That's amazing. So again, you've spoken quite a lot about the progression of strong women, particularly in comparison to the strong men competitions, which have kind of, I suppose, overruled everything else. And you've seen that very much, the strong women coming through and trying to fight for it as a place within the competition world. How has that come on in the last few years?
It's come on majorly. So in like 2017, 2018, we would be doing like national level competitions in the middle of fields with hardly any spectators. Last year, Britain's Strongest Woman was in an arena with thousands of people in the crowd, and there was like five-figure prize money. The sport is growing at such an alarming rate, and it's nice to know that we are getting the backing now from people, because we work just as hard as the men do, and we put on a show as women as well. And I feel like we do deserve to kind of have that same spotlight, and we're proving it time and time again, like through it with our competitions. in the American competition that I recently did, the Arnold USA, they had us on the same stage as the men as well. And they were actually saying that us women were more entertaining than the men. And I think that's why they've kind of decided to put on a big competition for us in November, where they're going to be paying us for the first time in history the same prize money as the men, because I think they're realising now that we kind of deserve to be there and we do put on that show.
It's crazy. I mean, as a complete outsider, for you to say that you were competing on the same stage as the men feels like such a backwards thing that that is news and that that was newsworthy. I don't know. Yeah, I can't understand how we could be in 2024 and that is still like a new thing to happen.
Not even just the space and the podiums and the arenas, but the sponsorship levels and everything that comes along with it, that essentially, I guess, could go to a place where it is a full-time role. Necessarily, I mean, it might not be something you want to do full-time, yeah, but something where it can actually support full-time and the team around you, rather than back to the day job, which you currently do, which I guess is a very different level of attention, as you say. Sort of, a lot of people probably don't know what you do in competition when you're watching over the spreadsheets. But that shift in sponsorship, I guess, will bring it back on par with potentially full-time roles as well.
Yeah, definitely. We still kind of deal with the stigma and the stereotypical kind of women shouldn't be strong, women should get back in the kitchen, or you don't look like a stereotypical woman and you shouldn't really be doing things like this, and all the kind of strength thing, and leave this to men, this is a man's sport. So we do kind of struggle still now with some people like that, and I think it's that's holding it back. Thankfully, the organisers are choosing to ignore it a lot more often now and putting us on the big stage, but we do still get some people, especially men, that kind of give those kind of comments and backlash. And I think if we didn't have that, the sport would be growing at a faster rate than it is already. I can't complain too much, though, because it is growing and it is kind of moving positively. It's just maybe not as quick as some of us would like.
And it is also just the power of that community. I speak, and my brother goes to the gym an awful lot, and I know that his best friends...
Have you thought about going with him?
We have our differences. We're cut from the same cloth, but in a very different way, he and I. But here's some of his best friends and whole community revolve around that discipline, the gym, the working out, and that sort of camaraderie, sort of brotherhood of that kind of realm. And I guess in a community like that, you've got more people watching now and going and spectating at the competitions, and that community is growing, not just the competitive side and the people you're competing with, but the whole community and awareness is growing. How much has kind of what you do on social media and kind of the exposure through other interviews and the media, how has that helped in terms of spreading the word for the Strong Women competition?
To be honest, it's helped a lot. A lot of the kind of like the individual feats of strength that us as women are doing are getting a lot more like traction and views on social media. There was an incredible woman called Chloe Brennan. She lifted a replica of the historic Dinny Stones in America. And I think that video got, God, I think it was close to 100 million views. And they were all kind of people that didn't really know about the sport. And they were like, what, women can do this? And they started like kind of being more interested in like strength sports and things like that. So I think one of the main things is using social media to kind of get out there and show the world what we can do and what we're made of, and that we can be entertaining in that way. So the more kind of feats of strength and the more barriers that we are breaking down is just kind of gaining that traction to kind of get more eyes on the sport. There are a lot of competitions in the UK now that are aimed at novices and first timers and things like that. So you don't necessarily need to kind of have a big foundation in strength to be able to get involved. I spend some of my weekends, like I'll go and I'll ref and appear at these competitions and kind of at grassroots level kind of show that we are kind of there with them, and it is one big sport and we are one big family no matter what level you are. So it's really nice to see that a lot more people are getting involved, whether or not they're like at the top of the level or whether they're a first time competitor just wanting to do it at the weekend for a bit of fun. Because the sport is about fun at the end of the day as well. And it's nice that people can be part of that community, whatever level they're at.
You're wearing the Arnold t-shirt now. That was a recent competition, right? Have you met Arnold Schwarzenegger?
I have, and he shook my hand and he called me a beast.
In a nice way, or does that just kind of undermine everything we've just been talking about for the last 15 minutes?
No, it's a compliment. It was a compliment. And I was just like, thanks. I proper out-angled him, though, and I felt really bad for it. But yeah, that's probably like my biggest claim to fame is Arnold Schwarzenegger calling me a beast.
That's not a bad claim to fame. Actually, what would you say is your biggest claim to fame? Who have you met? Who's called you a beast?
Jamie Oliver warned... No, that's... Yeah, the Jamie. Queen. I'm going to stick with the Queen.
Stick with the Queen.
You?
I think I've been called some rude names by a lot of people. Not always to my face.
You haven't shook hands with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
No, I've not. I've not shook hands with Arnold Schwarzenegger. No, that would be a really good one. I don't think he'd call me a beast.
One question. I mean, the last sort of half an hour has been remarkable and super inspiring. And the question I have is, where next? The world's strongest woman. Like, where do you go beyond that? What other things have you got coming up? And what else would you like to achieve?
So one thing that Paul had told me is that he believed that I could be the strongest woman to have ever lived. He passed away in December of 2022 after 7 years of being together. So this last year especially has been me kind of proving to myself that I am strong. And one thing that I want to do is prove to Paul that I can be the strongest woman to have ever lived. And that's my main goal now, is to be regarded as that. The record for the amount of World's Strongest Woman title wins is 3. So I want 5 World's Strongest Woman titles before I kind of quit. And I want it to be regarded as the strongest woman to have ever lived in the history of the world. So I want Paul's dreams for me to become a reality.
So one way that we like to wrap up all of these conversations, as if you're not enough of an inspiration, but if there was one dish or recipe or meal that you think everybody should have a go at and cook in their lifetime, what would it be? What's the one thing you can inspire somebody to cook?
It would have to be my mum's spaghetti bolognese, 100%. It is the nicest spaghetti bolognese and probably one of the most simple things to do as well. She used to put sweet corn in it, and I've never had spaghetti bolognese with sweet corn in it apart from my mum's. And it just adds that extra kind of like sweet crunch that really just makes it.
From a personal perspective, I want to thank you so much for being so open and vulnerable, and you're an incredible inspiration to so many people. You're doing such amazing things, and I think the world's strongest woman, the strongest woman to have ever lived, doesn't just mean a physical thing, and I think you've proved that time and time again. So thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
You're welcome. It's great to be here.